WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Wendy Gillette. President-elect Donald Trump picked Brooke Rollins as his Secretary of Agriculture, completing his cabinet selections. CBS's Deputy Director of Surveys, Jennifer DePinto, has more on Americans' reactions to the transition.
54% of Republicans today are excited about what Donald Trump will do as president, higher than the 24% who said they were excited back in 2016 when he was first elected.
But she says there's a sharp divide about his second term.
Democrats say they feel more scared about what Trump might do than Democrats did in 2016. And 7 in 10 of them think as president, he will threaten their rights and freedoms.
The new Congress will welcome the first incoming transgender member. Democrat Sarah McBride of Delaware says a GOP effort to restrict bathroom use is a distraction.
I didn't run for the United States House of Representatives to talk about what bathroom I use. I didn't run to talk about myself. I ran to deliver for Delawareans.
This is how it sounded near Tel Aviv earlier today. Hezbollah fired almost 200 rockets and other projectiles into northern and central Israel, injuring 7. It was in response to Israeli attacks in Lebanon yesterday. Reporter Linda Gradstein is in Jerusalem with new information about Israeli hostages in Gaza.
A spokesman for the Hamas military wing said that one of the female hostages, who he called one of the enemy's female prisoners, had been killed in an area that is under Israeli control. He also said the life of another female hostage is in danger. The Israeli army said it is checking the report.
The United Nations Climate Conference announced a new deal for wealthier countries to pay developing nations $300 billion a year. The UN's Simon Steele.
The many other issues we need to progress may not be headlines, but they are lifelines for billions of people. So this is no time for victory laps.
It's that time of year again, the Salvation Army's red kettles hitting city streets. CBS News Philadelphia reporter Aziza Shuler.
Whether you're a volunteer like Theo.
The greatest form of maturity is planting seeds under trees that you would never be able to sit under. That's what it's all about.
Or as Brian dropping off a donation.
Oh, I don't do this kind of volunteering and whatnot, so I feel like the least I can do is give some of my money to people who are doing the work.
It's all about helping families in need.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Wisconsinites overwhelmingly voted yes on a record number of school funding measures, according to the Wisconsin Policy Forum. That means people across the state are willing to increase their own taxes to fund their schools. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
Voters favored a record number, 169 referendums, authorizing a record total of $4.4 billion in new funding for 145 districts. Denise Gomer-Hutchison with the Wisconsin Public Education Network says districts are being forced to take their needs to the ballot box to fund gaps between prioritizing students and overdue bills.
The first responsibility of our public schools across the state is to educate children and to take care of the kids and the families that they serve every single day. So that means any available funds that public schools have, they put towards educating children. And so if that means a boiler has to be patched rather than replaced, that's what they're going to do.
Almost half of the state's 421 school districts passed a referendum in April or November. Hutchison blames the state for not adequately funding school priorities, from building maintenance to student mental health services. Regardless of whether taxpayers have children in public schools, she says the focus should be on providing every Wisconsin student with a quality education.
I want their experience in public schools to be as awesome as my 25 and 26-year-olds were.
The study found factors like inflation outpacing the state allocated per student revenue limits, the loss of pandemic aid, and staff competition in tight labor markets, all factors that contributed to the record number of referendums. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly cloudy skies on tap for today with light east winds and highs in the lower 40s. For tonight, we'll see rain developing, especially after midnight. Cloudy skies, lows in the mid-30s, or winds turning to the northwest. Rain snow mix on Monday.
It's 39 at our studios.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, former Wisconsin gubernatorial candidate Tim Michaels turns down a Trump cabinet position. Is he lazy or just against divesting? Also, MTG claims subpoena power. Who's she coming after? Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel, Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name is Jim Santel, and I'm your host for this, the second hour of our broadcast, talking all about, as we always do, the rule of law and government, courts, due process, all of those good things that our nation is all about. This past Tuesday in Manhattan, some challenges to those fundamental notions when, after anticipating that the presiding judge in that criminal case against Donald Trump, resulting in his conviction by a jury, 34 counts of violations of New York law, fraud in statements, fraud in representations, false statements in connection with his attempt to hide from all of us information that would presumably have been damaging to his 2016 campaign for the presidency. In the wake of all of that, in the wake of a several-week trial involving a jury of actually 14 people, ultimately 12 people deciding the case, court staff, witnesses coming in, judicial staff as well, lawyers, their staff coming in, the sentencing in that case after the return of the jury verdict, finding the defendant guilty of all of those counts, postponed repeatedly by Juan Merchan. Various reasons articulated along the way. And finally landing here in mid to late November, when Juan Merchan promised both a statement, an order, an opinion on the extent to which, if any, the Supreme Court case on immunities affects his capacity to continue to oversee the case and to impose judgment, a sentence upon Donald Trump. A decision that, interestingly, others have not had much difficulty in coming to resolution on. We know that during the course of all of these proceedings, Donald Trump at some point asked a federal judge to exercise jurisdiction, basically to remove the case from Judge Juan Merchan's state courthouse and bring it into federal court. And at the time, as we talked here on this broadcast, a federal judge in the Southern District of New York, his name is Judge Alvin Hellerstein, made quick shrift of the decision. And basically he said that the position of the defendant, Donald Trump, and his attorneys trying to get this case into federal court on the basis that somehow it is all about official acts of a president, simply unsupported. And Judge Hellerstein had no difficulty in saying that the request is baseless. He said the actions here, as alleged in the charges in state court, the actions that are now the focus of the confirmed judgment of guilty by this jury were private. They were unofficial acts, have nothing to do with what the Supreme Court said in connection with a president's capacity to commit crimes. He said they're outside of anything contemplated by the Supreme Court. And for that reason, Donald Trump's position in support of getting the case from state to federal court had to be rejected. Mm-hmm. Along the way, again, Judge Hellerstein, finding very quickly, Jess, that there's no there. This is not a difficult issue, again, because of the fact that we have a private person engaging these behaviors, not official acts of a presidency that doesn't exist at the time. And for that reason, making that finding a finding that we anticipated, you and I and others in America, that Judge Merchan would be making maybe with equally short shrift on this past Tuesday, which he did not do.
Well, the thing that just astounds me, Donald Trump was not president.
He wasn't president.
So what is the holdup here in saying, yes, we have a Supreme Court ruling that regardless of that being right or wrong, should not apply.
Just simply doesn't apply. The defined focus of a defendant has got to be a president of the United States of America. That's your point. That is the point that Judge Hellerstein understood. You should be on the federal judiciary yourself, Jess, one day. And you will join Judge Hellerstein in that common sense approach to this. And it really is the position that's been making the rounds inside of legal circles ever since this particular issue came up. Not a close call. Indeed, Alvin Bragg, the DA, has taken the position from the very start that there's nothing about this case that needs to be thwarted, needs to be stopped. He said that the immunity ruling has no bearing on this case. The Trump cover-up of the sex scandal is unrelated to his presidency. And Justice Merchan, again, called a justice in the New York system. Judge Merchan poised to rule on that matter simply and straightforwardly. He decided instead not to do so, surprising everybody, including me. Instead, he has some letters in front of him. Let's talk about what those letters say. In a recent letter to the DA's office, counsel for Donald Trump, as a part of their advocacy, which they should do, they should represent the defendant, Donald Trump, as aggressively and effectively as they possibly can, which plainly they have been doing, requested the prosecutors proactively move to dismiss the case. They argue that as defense counsel, that doing so would avoid, in their words, unconstitutional impediments to President Trump's ability to govern, citing the complex, sensitive, and intensely time-consuming presidential transition process. Now, that may be the case, once again, if we were talking about a sitting president. Right now, yes. Donald Trump, as you just indicated, just as we all know, is a private citizen.
Yes, he is.
And he'll be so by my calculation. I'm not good at math, as you know, but I think it's 58 more days from this weekend on.
Quite nearly two months.
Plenty of time. And this is the point.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of time, not only for Juan Merchan now in the wake of the election. The reason why he postponed this up to this time, did not want to affect the election. You have not done that, Juan Merchan. You have not presumably had an effect. Now you can sentence this defendant, and you can do so while he's a private citizen. For what it is worth, the practical aspects of this, it is not a weeks-long jury trial. Reason to believe that Donald Trump has a residence in New York. You can schedule this on for, say 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever you want to, maybe a full day, if you need to afford the defendant a right of elocution to tell the judge what he thinks should happen here, give the prosecution an opportunity to argue how the case should be sentenced. You can get this done well within one day, one business day. And then what happens? The judge, as a judge would do in virtually any case like this, would stay or tell the defendant, you don't have to go to prison if, in fact, that's what the sentence is. I will not execute whatever the sentence is. Could be probation, maybe a fine, maybe some other things.
Community service.
Whatever the judge may impose at that time, the judge has the complete capacity to say, that's my judgment. I'm concluding my involvement in this as a sentencing judge. Now you're going up on appeal. If you'd like to do that, Donald Trump will. Mm-hmm. And while that appeal is pending, Judge Merchan can and should have said, while that appeal is pending, nothing about my sentence will go into effect. That can be stayed for the coming year while the appeal goes ahead before the New York Appeals Court, before the next year while it goes in front of the New York Supreme Court. And indeed, if at some point down the road the United States Supreme Court decides to exercise jurisdiction, wants to grant a writ of certiorari, getting us well into maybe a third year, which is a long period of time, all that can happen. All that can happen while what? Well, Donald Trump is the president of the United States of America.
Yes.
And he can be represented not by the attorneys he's now appointing to be in the Department of Justice, but by other attorneys who can pursue that appeal on his behalf. Will not in any way obstruct the conduct of the presidency. Maybe they need to consult with him, but an appellate process does not require the defendant to be present at the appellate argument, at the filing of documents, of the briefs, those kinds of things. And so this notion that somehow this is going to affect the future presidency is exactly what Tim Snyder railed against when he talked once again about anticipating the future and obeying in advance, anticipating something that will happen, and therefore teaching power what it can do. That's the Timothy Snyder problem with all of this. Instead of doing that, what Juan Merchan did was equally stunning. He said, you know what, I'm not deciding anything related to immunity, and I'm taking that November 26th sentencing date off the calendar, and I'm doing nothing. I'm imposing no future scheduling deadlines, and in fact, he said nothing when he did all of this. He also received a letter from the district attorney, Alvin Bragg. Here's what Alvin Bragg said. He said, the people deeply respect the office of the president, are mindful of the demands and obligations of the presidency, and acknowledge that defendant's inauguration will raise unprecedented legal questions. What are those? I don't know. He also said, we also deeply respect the fundamental role of the jury in our constitutional system. And yes, indeed, that's Alvin Bragg saying to you, we have gone down this road. A jury threatened during the course of these proceedings, devoted weeks of their lives, court staff, witnesses, the entire mechanism of the judicial system contributed to this result. And now what we do in America, after you are done with that, after a jury does its duty, either acquitting a defendant, maybe sometimes hanging, not coming to a verdict, but in this case, finding the defendant guilty, what do we do in America? All of us know it's the S word. We sentence, right? And you can do that at any time now. You've got sufficient time. You have had sufficient time since July 11th, since September, and since these days right now. Interestingly, here's the way that the New York Times posted on this particular conundrum. It is curious. The New York Times, I generally regard with great regard and respect. Here's what they said. The district attorney has limited and unappealing options for responding to this request from the defense for the dismissal of the case. They wrote this. He could have either dropped the case, a move that would have voided the jury's verdict, probably alienating, as they said, many people. Absolutely right. Or suggested some way to pause it, potentially intensifying Donald Trump's ire and drawing some legal challenges. Well, members of the New York Times who wrote that, there's a third option. It's the normal one. It's the traditional one. It's the one that's contemplated by New York procedure, federal procedure, every procedure in the criminal courts of America, and that is to sentence a defendant in a timely fashion. We've now waited 6 months, and that is why this is so very upsetting. And that is why one has to wonder out loud, what is going on here? Why is it that this has happened? Why is it that Judge Juan Merchan did not simply make the decision that I'm going to bring this to conclusion? Donald Trump, you can appeal me on all of this, including the trial, jury selection, evidentiary rulings, but I'm going to conclude this now before Donald Trump takes the oath of office. We'll talk more about that and talk about the other cases also affected by the Supreme Court ruling and by this continuing sense of a need to defer and to bring all these to conclusion as Amicus, a law review, continues.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matinee on Air.
So this new dose is... Nope, that's not it. The price is nowhere to be found.
Mr. Green? Hi, it's all good. We've got this.
This is not just help from a Walgreens pharmacist.
Oh, new prescriptions. Cool. Let me check to see if these are the lowest cost options covered by your Medicare plan.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. This is someone supporting you every step of the way. Chat with a pharmacist today to find help saving. This is the human kind of help. Walgreens.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot. Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was when they moved the camera. Whenever it's the red alert. The,
right.
Yeah. That was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to fake.
Right. Lean left. Great. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amica Solaro. My name is Jim Santel. Thank you for joining me in our weekend broadcast. Also joining Jess, my terrific producer, as we talk and try to make sense of what's going on in America. The administration of justice, at least in the Manhattan courtroom, but also at least three other courts around the country, which we will get to. The prosecution saying by virtue of this letter to Juan Merchan that there are some competing interests here. The jury's verdict on the one hand and the office of the presidency on the other hand, effectively bringing politics inside the courtroom. And the question that we ask is what competing interests? Only in the narrowest sense, because, of course, elections and jury verdicts, both essential parts of our rule of law system, both essential parts of our democracy, they can stand apart. One does not supersede or replace the other. There is instead the court's basic duty to uphold the integrity of our criminal justice system, the rule of law, an obligation, I would argue, that is more important now than ever. More practically, why, as many people have argued, should any citizen put up with the sacrifices of service on a jury if the verdict in the end will mean nothing and will be subordinated to the defendant's convenience, even if that defendant happens to be the president of the United States of America? In the wake of that kind of common sense argument, the DA in this case has instead proposed not the normal and traditional sense of going ahead with sentencing. Instead, they have raised the prospect of a four-year freeze, F-R-E-E-Z-E, a freeze, as a preferable alternative to a dismissal. Defense obviously wants this case to go away completely. Alvin Bragg comes back and says, no, it doesn't have to be dismissed. Let's simply freeze it until 2029. Highlighting the need, as Alvin Bragg said, to balance these competing constitutional interests and failing to define exactly what those are. Well, let's think about that once again. 2029, then we postpone all of this until 2029. And after Donald Trump finishes his next term as the president, at that point, this case can return to Juan Merchan 4 years later and be sentenced, be the subject of a sentencing proceeding at that time. In the wake of that, then all of the appellate rights attached to Donald Trump through his counsel, who again cannot be, attorneys who are also now inside the Department of Justice. And at that point, 2029 becomes 2030 on appeal. And that becomes 3031 going up to the New York Supreme Court and maybe to the United States Supreme Court, just maybe in 3032.
Wow. And if my math is right here, and now I know they say don't do math on the radio, but that puts Donald Trump at the age of 82 when he leaves the White House. Meaning sentencing could now be taking him up to the age of 86.
That's the math that I follow, too. I'm not good at math, as you know. But it seems to me that that is also a consideration, right? And it underscores the overall broad perspective that justice should be expedited to the extent it can be. On behalf of whom? On behalf of the defendant. Defendants in the federal system, the state system, they have a right to a speedy disposition of the charges brought against them by the government. And yes, indeed, the people of the nation, yes, the people of the state have a right to some expedited resolution.
Well, this is why we have this saying that I believe you brought up when you joined us on the Dom Salvia show. Justice delayed is justice denied, especially in a case like this, where justice keeps getting kicked further and further down the road, because we see that that is the pattern that happens. It's not that justice is delayed for a day. Justice is delayed indefinitely.
Indefinitely. And the stunning part of that indefiniteness is that in taking all of this off of his calendar, for reasons that have prompted me to be scratching my head these days, Juan Marchand has not given us a reason. Previously, he told us that the reason for his delay was because of the Supreme Court opinion. We get that. In September, he said, well, gee, now we're in the middle of a campaign. And now we just took it off his calendar. Presumably, he's looking. He's looking to the fact that this defendant, this extraordinary defendant, will soon be the president of the United States of America, again, running afoul of what Timothy Snyder tells us in not anticipating the future. When you adapt your policies, your procedures, your behavior, you are teaching power what it can do. That authoritarianism, if it comes, is freely given, In this case, I would offer, as much as I respect Judge Juan Marchand, he's an outstanding jurist, as much as I respect Alvin Bragg, who has brought this case against all odds, in this particular instance, they are running afoul of that notion that justice delayed is justice denied, and by obeying in advance, you are compromising those fundamental rule of law principles. That happened just this past Tuesday. We do not know. The case is still pending. We do not know what will happen in the next 58 days or so, or even beyond that. Presumably, Judge Juan Marchand will choose between these two alternatives. The two alternatives are which are either dismissing the case outright before sentencing, rendering that jury verdict completely irrelevant.
Aye.
Or he'll do this other very peculiar thing, the Alvin Bragg freeze, and we'll extend all of this. We'll put this file on the shelf for the next 4 years and then resume actions in 2029.
Do you think that there is any chance at all that Judge Marchand will actually say, no, we are going to do a speedy work? We've been dragging our feet, but
yes,
now
right.
We will have a speedy disposition of justice. Now we will have a quick sentencing. Sentence him to 30 days.
Right. Do something.
Do
right.
Something.
Sentence something to close this case out. The answer is yes. You like to think that Judge Marchand, he is a bright guy. He is a good jurist. He knows what he's doing. He presided over this trial with great experience and great capacity. And there's no question about that. My guess is he is doing some head scratching of his own right now, wondering what to do, but hopefully also recognizing that he's got three choices, these two bad choices, and he's got the third choice, which is the normal one.
Yes.
And maybe, Jess, we can be broadcasting about this in the future and saying, indeed, justice, although delayed, was not denied here. And again, the disposition of this case can go forward even during the days, weeks, months, and years ahead of this presidency without compromising in anything related to some unprecedented legal questions about which the district attorney speaks. That result, that Tuesday surprise, if you will, was joined by other things that we've talked about in the past. We know the federal cases, especially running afoul of that notion of not obeying in advance. The federal cases, that is the Mar-a-Lago case, the documents case, and also the federal insurrection case, that is in Washington, D.C. In both of those, as we know well, the special counsel has moved the court to suspend everything, take the deadlines off, and indeed both courts reviewing those cases have done just that. When we come back, we'll talk more about, again, the imposition of resolution in these cases and the notion that justice can, in fact, be accomplished in the future as Amicus continues.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. CBS News Brief. Most of President-elect Donald Trump's top administration picks are now set, still required to clear Senate confirmation hearings. CBS's Nicole Killian reports on other outstanding work.
President-elect Trump has filled out most of his cabinet. A few economic positions remain up for grabs, including U.S. Trade Representative and Small Business Administrator.
Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul said of Trump's second term on CBS's Face the Nation, he supports deporting undocumented immigrants, but opposes using the military to do so.
I will not support and will not vote to use the military in our cities. I think it's a terrible image.
The Salvation Army's Red Kettle charity campaign kicked off in Philadelphia. Captain Benjamin Lyle was there.
The money that comes in will go to support children and people in need this holiday season, whether it's with food or housing, toys, and many other things.
CBS News Brief, I'm Wendy Gillette.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks make it three in a row. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks with a 125-119 win over the Hornets. Milwaukee's now won three in a row, five of their last six, despite the Hornets, LaMelo Ball scoring 50 points. Bucks head coach Doc Rivers.
Listen, this was going to be a hard game. You know, the way I looked at it, through the schedule, your last game at home, playing a back-to-back at home, I did not want to put Giannis back in the game, but we had to, with five or whatever left. But I'm just happy we won the game, and we'll fix the other stuff.
College hoops, the Badgers men's team facing Pittsburgh today in their tournament in Orlando. Marquette remains undefeated after beating the Georgia Bulldogs 80-69. College football. Wisconsin losing at Nebraska 44-25. The Badgers move the ball at the start of the game but missed two field goals.
Yeah, those are the things on the road you just can't have happen. You got to find ways, and that was definitely not one of the things that helped us.
That's Badgers head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly cloudy skies on tap for today with light east winds and highs in the lower 40s. For tonight, we'll see rain developing, especially after midnight. Cloudy skies, lows in the mid-30s, or winds turning to the northwest. Rain snow mix on Monday.
It's 39 at our studios.
Earl Ingram.
Don from Milwaukee.
I enjoy your show. Right now, at a time like this, you are great therapy for me. I don't know what I'd do without you guys.
We enjoy you as well. That's the importance of Civic Media and this platform. And Sandy and I take this seriously. We're going to continue to do whatever it is we can to make sure that people like you continue to get your voices heard.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
It's Thanksgiving week, and I've got a special guest, Professor Bill Whitford, the named plaintiff in the Supreme Court gerrymandering case out of Wisconsin, joins us. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel, talking all about the administration of justice this weekend on our broadcast and advancing the proposition that an election, even the election of a president of the United States of America, is no reason to undermine and reverse the normal course of the criminal justice process. No reason in this case to postpone Donald Trump's felony sentencing. None whatsoever. We know as well that in those federal cases, we're approaching on a different plane, different mechanisms, different circumstances, pretty much the same result of these cases dying with a whimper. We know that the federal case pending in front of Judge Tanya Chutkan, that's the federal insurrection case, has also, upon the motion granted by the judge to suspend everything there, to cancel all the proceedings, to cancel all the deadlines, and Judge Tanya Chutkan has done just that, even though, again, 58 days during which she could also issue her opinion on a like case, a like situation, whether or not that Supreme Court case requires her, as to the federal case, does it require her to abandon the case, to dismiss it? It's a tougher question. It is a closer question because, again, we're talking about a sitting president, but it's one that she has promised to deliver. And plainly, by granting the motion of Jack Smith through the Department of Justice, she has all but signaled that that decision, as we talked about in our broadcast last week, and will never come. Similarly, the other federal case, we know that that's pending right now in front of the 11th Circuit. Why? Because there, Judge Eileen Cannon out of the Southern District of Florida made this unprecedented and unfounded decision that Jack Smith did not have the authority to prosecute the documents case, the classified documents prosecution there against Donald Trump and others, including some obstruction of justice charges. And so Jack Smith initially took that up on appeal to the 11th Circuit. And as recently as just the past couple of weeks, filed a motion there and said, you know what, 11th Circuit, why don't you suspend everything here? Take off any of these deadlines. We'll get back to you both in Washington, D.C. and also in the 11th Circuit, which is Atlanta. We'll get back to you by December 2nd. That's the deadline now established in both of those cases, both of the federal cases, both of them with suspended deadlines. Rejected and rescinded deadlines of all kinds. No hearings going forward based upon the granting of these motions in both of those cases. And finally, just this past week, consistent with these other three matters, the Manhattan case, in which now we have the likelihood of no sentencing at all, no resolution there, the federal insurrection case, in which, again, it's entirely possible that the United States Department of Justice is going to dismiss that as well, anticipating the presidency of Donald Trump, likely going to dismiss the documents case as well. Again, anticipating that he will be one day president and doing that based upon a principle inside the Department of Justice says you can't prosecute a sitting president, even while that person is not presently the president, applying that proactively, assuming that that will happen, and it will, but right now in the 58 days, deciding not to seek some at least partial resolution of those cases. And so, again, obeying in advance and telling power what it can do in the future. More of that in Georgia. Curiously, just this past week, the Georgia case now also on appeal to the Georgia appellate court without any comment, without any explanation, just like Judge Juan Merchan in New York. The Georgia appellate court took off its calendar the scheduled oral argument in the appeal in that case as well. You may recall well that that appeal was a challenge by the Trump defense team to the decision by Judge Scott McAfee to keep Fonnie Willis on the case. Also, Fonnie Willis had appealed the decision by Scott McAfee to dismiss about six counts of the omnibus indictment against Donald Trump and others. All that pending in front of the Georgia State Appellate Court. Just this past week, the appeals court there issues an order, a directive on its docket saying, we're not going ahead with anything further. The appellate argument taken off the calendar, not based upon any articulated statement. And that, as we head into late November and into the Thanksgiving holiday and other holidays coming up in the lifeblood of our nation in December, and certainly looking into the January period when we will be inaugurating a new president of the United States of America. That is the status of these cases in state and federal courts in our land. All, as I said, dying not with some disposition, not with even interim dispositions as to, with respect to the federal cases, getting those decisions from the 11th Circuit and from Judge Chutkan that can define the future, even though those cases will never go to trial. Those things are important, as I have argued previously. The Georgia appellate case, plainly, Fannie Willis still very much interested in appealing that and pursuing that appeal, but being told, at least just this past week, that the oral argument will no longer go ahead. We don't know what that means. Would the appeals court there do something different down the road? Possible. Maybe they've already made up their mind on all this appeal and don't need oral argument. That's a possibility. Most likely they, too, are anticipating the future when one of the defendants there, his name is Donald Trump, will become the president of the United States of America. The difference there, of course, is that you have many other non-presidents who are also defendants in that case. And even in the Mar-a-Lago case, two other defendants joined with Donald Trump on obstruction of justice charges. What do you do with those? What's going on in the 11th Circuit? What's going on in the Georgia Appellate Court? What's going on in the District Court in the District of Columbia? And what has happened just this past week in the Manhattan Criminal Court that is, at least for now, going in the direction of no sentencing for a defendant found guilty by a jury unanimously beyond a reasonable doubt of violating the criminal law in the state of New York. Needless to say, an awful lot of frustration, a lot of concern about all of these cases going away. Once again, a citizen who adapts in this way is teaching power what it can do. Power also the subject of things going on overseas and some lessons coming from rule of law events happening in Brazil and Hong Kong and France. Let's talk about those, Jess, as well. Let's begin with this other news coming from this hemisphere, but to the south of us, this coming out of Brazil. Brazilian authorities just on Thursday of this past week announcing that they are recommending criminal charges against former President Jair Bolsonaro. Over what? Over his role in a broad plot to stay in power, to cling to power after he lost the 2022 presidential election.
Oh, goodness.
Sounds familiar, does
Very
it not?
Much so.
Right? The current president, his name is Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. He has refused to acknowledge that Bolsonaro has refused to acknowledge that the actual president, Mr. da Silva, has taken the position of the presidency, a legitimate election there, and Bolsonaro refusing to acknowledge defeat. And as a result of that, in the investigation that has followed, again, a different system there. The police have urged prosecutors to charge the former president, Bolsonaro, and three dozen others, including members of his inner circle, for crimes, according to their recommendation, the violent abolition of the democratic rule of law, a coup d'etat, and criminal organization. All of that coming out of charges recommended, again, in their system by the police, now going on to prosecutors to determine whether or not those charges should, in fact, proceed. After a two-year investigation in which police raided homes and offices, they arrested senior aides to Bolsonaro, and secured confessions and plea agreements as to some of this along the way. Along the way, the police also said that there was evidence that Bolsonaro had overseen this broad conspiracy based upon the results of their investigation, planning the arrest of a Supreme Court judge, personally editing a draft decree aimed at overturning the election results, and presenting the coup plans to top military leaders seeking their support. Sounds like an attempt to overthrow the government.
Indeed,
when you have
it does.
left government itself again. Shades of what we have seen charged also here in America, but not the result of any conviction.
Yes.
As Amicus continues, we'll tell you more about that very interesting recommendation for charges against a now former president. More about that, and then also lessons from Hong Kong and also other things in our future with respect to other matters pending here in the United States of America. So what exactly is it? What exactly is it that Bolsonaro is also accused of in prior matters, also recommended by the police in Brazil? In prior matters, he is recommended for prosecution for attempting to falsify COVID-19 vaccination records throughout the nation.
Oh, that's not ideal.
It is not ideal. Again, compromising the health, the safety of his nation, and also a plot. Get this, a plot? Curious? To embezzle jewelry that he received as gifts from foreign leaders while in office, as if all of this is not enough, embezzling some jewelry also. Mr. Bolsonaro,
just for good measure.
Just for good measure, we'll throw in some theft of a piece of a gift, plainly from foreign leaders. How is that possessory interest, as they say? How should that be understood? That's in the possession of the people of Brazil. It was given to Bolsonaro, not in his private capacity, but as a gift to the people of Brazil. Again, charged or are proposed to be charged by the police, that also pending as to Bolsonaro. All of this also, again, now in the hands of the top prosecutor. His name is Paulo Gonet, and he has to decide whether to pursue these charges against Bolsonaro and the others as a result of this investigation. All of this, of course, comes in the wake of something else that's very similar to what happened here in the United States of America. Jess, you and others remember well this episode reminiscent of the attack upon our own Capitol when supporters of Bolsonaro invaded and then vandalized Brazil's Congress, their government building, the Supreme Court, presidential officers just days after the incoming actual president, Mr. Lula, took office. And they were hoping, of course, to provoke a military intervention at that time.
They were hoping to provoke a military intervention.
Yes, right. Get the army to join us in this attempt to overthrow the government, even while we are attempting this very event.
And it sounds like, fortunately, that was not successful.
It was not successful, as it was not successful in the end here in the United States of America. And as a result of all of this, as if Mr. Bolsonaro's problems are not serious, in June, just a number of months ago, there's a thing called the Electoral Court in Brazil. And the Electoral Court has barred Bolsonaro from running for office. That's a good thing, I suspect, until 2030. And it ruled that he had violated the law when he summoned diplomats to the presidential palace. And he made some baseless claims to them that the nation's voting systems were rigged against him.
Familiar
once again. Similar. There you have a law enforcement set of principles going forward. We'll see what the prosecutor does with respect to all of those. They're a former president, plainly in trouble with the judicial system. And we will continue to watch that. Lessons about what the rule of law can and should do. Mr. Bolsonaro, plainly presumed innocent until proven guilty, if at all, by a jury there in Brazil. That is a democracy. They have the same kinds of trappings that we have. In that nation, at least, and that nation there, the authorities, the police, and presumably the prosecutor looking at all of this at some point will embrace the rule of law and say, we need to proceed with this because it is right and is decent. As you have said before, Jess, it is the right thing to do as people involved in government. That happening in Brazil just this past week. And then we've got more lessons coming in from overseas. And this one happens to do with what happened in Hong Kong. Pro-democracy leaders sentenced in a mass trial just this past Tuesday. As Amicus Law Review continues, we'll tell you what happened there and what happens in an authoritarian state that it wants to bring to a conclusion voting and advocacy against the government. We'll talk more about that as our broadcast continues.
The Tap.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Now, I've been reading up on the policies of all the presidential candidates with an eye on my wallet. happen. Former President Trump has been talking up a new 20% tax on goods from other countries. It's called a tariff. I did some research, and it's not sounding good for the prices that we pay. A tariff is just a tax that the government charges to businesses when they bring goods into the country. And the National Retail Federation says that tariffs force small businesses to raise prices or just eat those costs. And typically, big corporations just pass those prices on to consumers. The Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center says that, quote, Trump's tariffs would significantly raise the prices of imported goods since they'd mostly be passed on to consumers. And I know prices are not rising like they were. I mean, hooray for that. But man, I still can't afford to pay 20% more for things. We will keep you posted on how this develops. In the meantime, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Solarview. My name is Jim Santelli. And this is the last minutes of our broadcast this weekend, going overseas to draw some lessons about what we should think about our own nation in connection with the rule of law. In Hong Kong, just this past Tuesday, a Hong Kong court, three judges who were appointed, placed in those positions by, yes, the Beijing government, by China, sentenced 45 former politicians, activists in a mass trial that decimated and destroyed the Hong Kong's once very vibrant pro-democracy opposition and served as a warning, basically, that resistance to Beijing can be very costly. It's what happens when, indeed, an authoritarian government decides that they no longer want to entertain even the possibility of protests in their nation, in the city, in that particular case. The offense, according to the trumped up allegations there, according to the authorities, holding or taking part in an unofficial primary election. What is this all about? Well, again, the facts coming out of this very, very skeletal proceeding here that resulted in the convictions and the sentencings of 45 people is that this pro-democracy camp, this group of people, has said that they put together a primary vote, very similar to what other primary elections had been there, as a part of their attempt to invest in the legislative chamber there, some people who have their own view. More than 600,000 people cast votes in this primary election. They were choosing candidates who were prominent supporters of the anti-government demonstrators. And as a result of that, the government clamped down and said that is not only contrary to what we will do here in Hong Kong, but to stop you from doing that in the future, we're going to charge you with criminal offenses. And this past week in this authoritarian government, a sign of what an authoritarian government can do if it gets rid of the fundamental trappings of justice, including due process, including investigations that are legitimate, telling people what they're charged with, giving them an opportunity to engage in a proper defense. If all of that goes away, you see what happened this past week in Hong Kong. In one fell swoop, the authorities arrested a number of years ago all sorts of people, legal scholars, opposition strategists, pro-democracy activists, younger politicians, older politicians, people who were advocating for freedom in Hong Kong, again, now overseen by Beijing, now jailed for anywhere between 4 and 5 and 6 and 8 and 10 years in some cases for their advocacy there in Hong Kong. All of this, again, coming after prosecutors accusing the defendants of conspiracy to commit subversion, some national security offenses, arguing that the objective of this election primary, which was held way back in 2020, was to undermine, destroy, and overthrow the existing political system and the very structure of Hong Kong. Those are words, those are charges that come from an unfettered authoritarian government. And today, people are in prison for years and years in the future based upon their interest in having voting and permitting people to go to the voting places to elect representatives who represent them. There is the lesson for America. If indeed any administration in the future, at any time in the future, we cede authority to an authoritarian who says, you know what, we don't need to do any of those trappings of justice. Instead, we'll just move right to a trial and will result in the sentencing of people. We'll send them to jail. That is a lesson coming from Hong Kong. Plainly, an awful lot of civil rights responses to that, human rights responses, cries to the Beijing government to reverse those actions, probably falling on deaf ears. And finally, here in our weekend broadcast, returning to a story that Jess first recommended to me because of the seriousness of it and also the importance of what trials can do. This is a case involving a defendant and many, many others, 51 men altogether on trial, mostly for accusations of an aggravated rape of a woman named Giselle Pellicot. Her husband, Dominique Pellicot, has admitted to crushing sleeping pills into her food and drinks for almost a decade. And then, stunningly, shockingly, inviting dozens of men he met online into their home to rape her alongside him while she was unconscious. This past week, the trial continues. Again, a trial in which the result is probably known, the importance of a trial and affording all victims opportunities to be heard. Not only Giselle Pellicot, who has become something of a national icon, she is a woman of incredible strength in the wake of this horrific thing that has destroyed her family. And that's the point of what has happened just this past week. As a result of the continuing trial there, the family members of Giselle Pellicot, her family, and of course, Dominique Pellicot have taken the stand. And the oldest son, for example, it was the whole family, he said, in a dramatic day of testimony there. A whole family that has been devastated by what has happened here. You need to know that this trial is a trial of a devastated family. David Pellicot, himself, he's the son, is haunted, he said, by fears that his own son, who remains in psychological treatment, was also abused by his grandfather. His sister, who goes by the name of Caroline Darien, we also talked about her, a shadow of her former self. She also testified about concerns that her father may have done the same thing. She is convinced that she was also drugged and sexually abused by their father. A youngest sibling, Florian, took the stand to say that his marriage has collapsed as a result of this. Cost me a divorce and thousands of questions. Absolute, abject meltdown tragedy. And in France, a system that permits at least their voices to be heard in this all-important trial that's going on, these defendants will go away to jail for the rest of their lives, as well they should for this absolutely heinous event. The affirmance there in France of a system of justice that permits trials to complete and to go to jury verdicts, which will come based upon the admissions and based upon the other evidence being presented, all of that a lesson to America, again, about the importance of investigating cases, of affording victims and others involved in these cases the opportunity to be heard, and the possibilities of justice imperfectly being doled out to a nation and to a family plainly devastated by criminal conduct. A lot to consume here on Amicus, a Law Review. A lot of lessons to be taken from overseas and also from our own nation about the importance of the rule of law and justice, the ways in which courts should indeed behave and conduct themselves to ensure that all of us understand the importance of due process and ensuring that justice is done for all of us. As we go forward in future broadcasts, we'll continue with that theme. Stay with us for those broadcasts as well. Have a good weekend, everybody.
This is 93.5 The Tap. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will recap all the weekend's news, and we'll be joined by Dr. Kristen Lierley in hour number two. We'll wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Worthington, Minnesota continues to shine. It's worth a look. We've expanded so many things. It's a time of growth. We've expanded recreation activities with our indoor ice arena, our indoor turf rec center and playground, and our outdoor water park, Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look. Our schools have expanded, and so has our industry. We're continuing to expand our population also, with lots ready to build on Glenwood Heights. So let's grow together in Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.